You're listening to You Talking to Me with Big JD, where I talk to everybody about anything and everything, different guests and a different topic every week, right here on the All Talk Radio Network. Hello, Big JD here on the All Talk Radio Network on You Talking to Me. And today we're talking with Ron Harway from Sun Parlor Flyers, Sun Parlor Flyers Club, which is remote control airplanes. I'd like to welcome you to the show, Ron.
Hi, JD.
Nice to have you. And I guess we'll get started with some maybe some more personal information, like how you became interested in remote control planes. Were you interested in regular airplanes when you were younger, or did you actually start with the remote control stuff?
Well, years ago, I remember when I bet you I was maybe only about 5-6 years old, and I seen a remote control airplane out by the Windsor Airport back in the I'd say the early 60s, late 50s, and one of them was operating underneath the old system, and it crashed out there behind my dad's car. And As we ran out there, my dad says, "Don't touch it, don't touch it." But I was really amazed at this plane, how big it was. But it wasn't a full-size plane, how big it was over me.
Yeah, I'm actually a little surprised at the size of some of the planes, because as I wanted to ask you about a little later on, some of the more toy ones that kind of came out when I was a kid were quite a bit different. How about, do you have any other interest, like interest in other remote control vehicles or anything like that, or did you, or model trains or anything?
We were getting into slot cars and a few little things when I was a kid, but mostly planes was the big thing. I never got into cars. If we ever got into them there, we started off with just like the smaller, like building models and that stuff, but never got around to the automated type.
Right, the ones with the motors. And,
yeah.
What was your first remote control plane?
My first remote control plane, actually, it was a trainer, and I thought I was real brave, and I went out to Leamington there, and I got it out on the road. There wasn't no instructor, and I had spent all this money, and I took off, and I nailed the only tree that was out there in Leamington. Yeah.
So was that was a remote control plane?
That was remote control, yeah.
Okay, no rubber bands on that or anything? Or?
Well, back younger there, I used to have the little ones that used to grab had the controller, and you go and spin around in a circle, but it only went maybe about half a turn, and it was in the ground.
Okay,
the motor would die. But
were those the Cox planes?
Yeah, the Cox planes.
Yeah, I had one of those, and it went around once. We brought it out. I got it as a gift, birthday present from my aunt and uncle. Right away, we brought it out to put everything together or whatever it was, and put the motor in. I guess I don't think it was even in or anything. You had to set it up somehow. Brought it out to the school ground nearby.
Right.
It went in one circle and hit the ground and smashed into a million pieces.
That was it. Mine did the same thing. I mean, I think that was typical of that. And you had to put the Cox fuel, and you have to get it fired up. And if you're lucky enough to get the motor running and stay running there, then yeah, you get maybe one or two turns.
Yeah, they didn't seem like a very stable idea. One thing that always scared me was the motors were, and I imagine they are on the other planes too, but it was so loud, and just a whing was like, it was kind of scary for a kid.
Yeah.
Because I was pretty young when I got it. So,
yeah.
Now you mentioned a trainer. Is that a type of airplane, or is that a...
Yeah, the trainer, they're about $450 for the complete kit now. They used to be very expensive. It used to be very expensive to get into the hobby. Mm-hmm. Like the radios used to be almost $1,000, and now for less than $500, you can get the complete kit and you can be ready to go on these.
Do you like to fly for real?
Actually, I do fly. A friend of mine, Pete Dupnik, he's a member of our club and is also a full-time pilot, because we do have 4 full-time pilots.
Okay.
And he took me up there, and I did, I'm sure the FCC wouldn't, but he did let me
we'll
take over
this out
the
here.
Controls.
Yeah.
And I took over the controls, and yeah, it's just like, it's very smooth, just like driving a car.
Well, that's got to be really neat, yeah. So I guess I take it you don't have a pilot's license, but...
No.
Okay. Did you, you didn't do any landing or taking off or anything? Just flying?
No,
in the
it's area? Just basically flying there. Yeah, I flew all along the Lake Erie coastline up until Colchester, and then he took over like that. But yeah, it operates just exactly the way it's supposed to. It's a little bit long. The response times are longer than it would be if you had the smaller ones, because when you make our move on the smaller ones, it moves
quicker,
very quick.
Yeah. I guess the training that you've done as far as remote control planes kind of came into play there, or yeah. Simulation and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, I learned the hard way there. I was told that you should go through an instructor, but I figured, I can handle that thing there. So exactly, yeah. I had the same mistake everybody makes is go out there without an instructor, take off from an old field or an old county road in there, and there goes your $400 investment real
right.
quick.
Yeah. Not much of a flyer myself. I don't like to fly. I've on two occasions I've flown. I flew to Arizona once, and I flew to New York.
Oh yeah.
And I have to fly to Europe this year, and that's going to be like a 10-12 hour flight.
I love being on a plane. I was only maybe about 4 or 5 years old there when I was on a seaplane out on the water there, and that was quite yeah. quite a thing there to be yeah. in one of a plane. But I've been being we lived around the airport, seeing them and air shows. I used to be at the Windsor Airport. I'm just so used to seeing planes all yeah. the time, and now it became an addiction.
Uh-huh.
Oh yeah.
And how about family and friends? How do they feel about your hobby or a sport, if you call
well, everybody,
it that?
Everybody, it does take a little bit away from you. Being now that I've worked my way up to the president of the company, or president of the flying club, mm-hmm. it takes a while. It takes a lot of my time away. But everybody says the same thing there. Boy, those things look expensive, but yeah, when yeah. you get out there, when they see how it's amazing that they actually do what they can do. And everybody's, and then now everybody, as soon as they see it, they want to do it.
Right, yeah,
and
yeah.
We teach it.
So family, friend, and they pretty much support. They come out and watch and stuff like
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah. Actually, we have special events, and actually a lot of the family and friends, they come out and they help us out, with any of our fundraising.
You do some volunteer work and stuff. Oh, that's great. Yeah. That's really helpful and yeah. supportive for sure. And I noticed when talking to you, you wouldn't know that you were talking about remote control planes sometimes, the way you talk about the flying club and the planes and, yeah. and the fuels they use and all the different things, all the terminology, it seems like just, so associated with a real plane.
Right.
You wouldn't know that you were talking about remote control planes. It's
exactly.
So a lot of the stuff must be pretty much the same. A lot of things you refer to and so forth.
Well, exactly. The flight surfaces that are on the plane is exactly like a normal plane. It flies with the center of gravity. All the technology from the remote controls was learned from full size planes.
Right.
And the technical part of it per se regarding the motors and the radio equipment has its own it's significant to that kind of airplane and that, but you wouldn't see these controls and special servos and motors on a full-size plane, but the basic flight characteristics are the same.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of the things just the same and scaled down to
right.
whatever. And I take it there's quite a few different sizes. Some
yeah,
smaller.
It can vary. I mean, we've got the thing called the peanut scale, which are about the size of your fist that will actually fly remote control. We have some as small oh, yeah. as very small as like that, and we've got some some of the people are flying out of England there with 25, 30 foot wingspans, and
wow.
regulations change. We have a limit over in Canada where they cannot exceed 77 pounds, 100 pounds in the United States, but some people bend the rules, and you'll see some guys with some heavy stuff out there.
Some of them sound like you could actually get a kid on there. And
oh yeah, oh yeah. I mean,
has anybody ever gone for a little ride on one?
We've
like
had,
on
we have strict regulations that no animals and kids can
there
fly.
There we go. Yeah, okay, got to get that in for sure.
Yeah.
And how about you yourself? What are you flying? How many planes have you got? And
In flight, I've got three or four that are ready to go at any time there, and I've got a couple of them on the building board, but up in the attic, there's got to be pretty close to maybe 15 to 20 of them that are going to eventually get built.
Uh-huh. So you spend quite a bit of time
yeah.
like building and stuff
yeah,
like
you
that
can,
as well?
You can, like, back in the old days, you used to have to make them from scratch with the balsa and that stuff.
Right.
And we still have a lot of guys that still do that. But it can get very, very time-consuming doing that. So they have new things now called ARFs, which are almost ready to fly in different stages. They can be either in the wood stage. They can either be in the just all you got to do is add your motor to some of them. Or they're complete. You just got to plug in the wings. You could have it done in 5 5 hours and you're in the air.
That's
so it depends on how much money you want to spend. It gets expensive when you get into the ARFs.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break and come back. And I just want to ask you something about blueprints there as far as building, I guess, in the past. And we'll continue on about the club. I wanted to ask you a little bit about, you mentioned actually cutting the balsa and so forth. Would it be blueprints that you would buy at one time to build the planes?
There's two ways that you can get about it. You can buy the actual prints. They've got prints, the people that have developed a lot of prints, and you order the prints and you build them from scratch. They're called the scratch builders. You order all of your balsa. It tells you exactly what you need and you build it that way. And there's also kits that you can buy, these pre-made kits that have already been die cut, and all you've got to do is really just glue all the pieces together. And we usually use two types of glues that are out there, as epoxies for the heavy stuff with the hardwoods, and for the balsa we use CA glue, which is super glue, you know.
Right.
And it does it very instant. In fact, glues fingers really quick too.
Yeah, I've had some experiences with that in the past. Moving on to the club now, it's the Sun Parlor Flyers.
Yeah.
And how long has the club been around?
We've been incorporated since 1972, and we're up to, I think at the time there was only about 6 or 7 members, but now we're going into 2007, we've got 104 members now.
Yeah, okay, you've been around for quite a while. And you're the president, and how long have you been president?
This is my third year of the 3-year term there. I started off being, get involved with the club and work my way up to secretary, treasurer, and vice president, and now I'm president.
And, what's the process actually to get you, you know, through those stages there? Or is it that you have voting and things like that, I guess?
Yeah, we have, every November we have our elections, and the elections in there, we vote, presidents, all the different club members, and the editor of our magazine. We go through a process, and we vote everybody in.
I'd imagine there's obviously the other coordinators of the club and so forth, and the secretary and so forth. There's probably some other people maybe that you'd want to mention that...
Our current vice president is Dave Kalbflesh, and Dave's probably going to be the next president. My brother Rob Harway, he's the treasurer of the club. Bob Garrett's the secretary. Dan Kalapos maintains our emitter magazine we have that we put out to all members, and it's available on the internet. And we also have George Mock as our webmaster. And George maintains our Sun Parter Flyers webpage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we've got a guy that maintains our field, Orv Mass, and Orv does a good job making sure that everything's taken care of. And we just hired a new guy, Peter Redpath. Peter takes care of the field, makes sure that it's manicured to near golf green flatness, and there he's doing a fine job.
We'll talk about that later too, the importance of the field and the runway and so forth, and as well. You mentioned the magazine.
Yeah.
The magazine a newsletter, or is it something printed that you send out? Or?
We have all members receive this thing called the emitter. It's available online there, and that's from our club. But we also are members of MAC, which is the Model Aircraft Aeronautics of Canada, and that's our main organization with 13,000 members across Canada.
Wow.
We have to become a member of MAC as well as the club, and that's where our insurance comes from for the $5 million that each member gets. And they also have their web page, and they also have a bi-monthly magazine of MAC, which talks about everybody across Canada, what's going on.
Wow, it's quite widely recognized.
Yes, as Sun Parter, our club we're the most active club and the largest club within the organization down here. So, and eventually, it was told that MAC actually originated right down in this area.
Oh, really? And so that's you guys are the largest club across Canada?
Right across Canada.
Wow, that's great. And How about meetings and other mandatory issues and dues and things like that? How does that work?
We have our meetings once a month there that we meet at the Windsor Flying Club. We got a partnership. Mm-hmm. We shake hands with the Windsor Flying Club there. They're very good to us. And anytime they have an event, they always ask us if there's an air show at the airport. We always put on a display. Mm-hmm. Our dues are $75 a year, and that includes all the benefits of having our events and being able to fly within the club, and you know, it's all we ask is to have maybe a four to five hours of volunteer hours per year, mm-hmm. which you could eat that pretty good. A lot of us wear a lot of hats, and a lot of us are doing probably up to 10 different things. So
that's what I was going to ask you, with anything mandatory there as far as meetings or anything. But the main thing really is the volunteer work.
Volunteer hours, yeah.
Well, that's good. And it doesn't sound like a lot. And for all the fun. That's great. And I wanted to ask you now about where you're usually flying and discussing the importance of the runways.
Yeah, we have two flying fields. We have the Leamington Airport that we lease throughout the year for flying the jets and that. That's where we hold our jet rally. And we also have our main field, which is out at the 4th Concession in Anderton by Villanova School, by the CKWW Towers. We actually fly on their field. They give it to us at no charge in there, but it's a nice little area in there. It's about 3 or 4 acres in there, and we maintain that in there, and they're pretty nice to us too. We look out for their stuff, and they look out for us.
Right.
And we've been there for since 72, so it's been a long time.
Sure. Been around for quite a while. How about the runways? Because we were talking previously, and you'd mentioned about dust and things like that, and we want
The grass runways that we use are usually for propeller type planes, because they can accept, they can ingest grass and everything like that.
Right,
it doesn't shut them down. But the jets are limited to the runway out there with the paved asphalt runway because of the smoothness of the jet, and they also got brakes that slows the jets down. That's a requirement, for the safety factor. And they don't do as well on grass as they do on the pavement, and you don't really want to, on the jet, you don't want to really ingest any little stuff into the air, because it can destroy that.
Have you seen some that have gotten?
You get a flame out. You can pick up a rock. It's just like anything else. You don't put your hands in front of them there, because they can suck you in there, because they're traveling it, and there's quite a vacuum in front of those, so you can avoid anything.
Later on in the show, I'm really looking forward to discussing not only the planes but the jets, because I'm really intrigued by the speed and the RPMs these things are running at and so forth, and it's just incredible. What I was wondering though is when you get all the dirt and the dust and all that stuff sucked in there, will it blow out the motors or they're...
Yeah, well, there's a screen in the front in there, but what it usually does, it can get ingested into the front in there, and it can actually stop the stator, because the stator's turning at quite a high RPM, and if there's anything that can go in there, being it's turning at well over 100,000 RPM there, it can shatter a blade and they can explode inside in there. And being you're dealing with some pretty high temperatures and speed, it can cause a lot of damage.
So
if it hits the prop planes, it's not a big deal, because it'll kind of fling it out of the way in there, and it'll put a chip in a prop.
So if something goes wrong with those jets, it's going to be kind of disastrous.
We have to completely wipe the whole runway down, especially for any big event that we've got, because that's quite dangerous.
Yeah, and speaking of events, how about charity work, community involvement, and I know that you had mentioned to me earlier about the University of Windsor and the Boy Scouts that you do some work with.
Yes, there's two organizations we deal with. Our former chief instructor, Dennis Pratt, he works with the University of Windsor, and they have this competition called the Heavy Lift Competition, where they see how much weight they can actually carry on these planes, and as they keep adding more and more weight to it there, they have the competition. They got about 30 teams in that, and we sponsored the University of Windsor team, and Dennis gave them their expertise, and 2 years ago we came in first place down in the States and cleaned house down here from our Windsor team. And we also deal with the Boy Scouts. The Boy Scouts, the Cub Pack, we invite them into our indoor, and we have them build their own glider and flat. We have competitions in that, so we give back to the community for all of it. Being we're also a nonprofit organization too.
Right, right. So that's a lot of fun, and it's great fun, I'm sure, to especially the Boy Scouts, and that to have kids come out and that sort of thing. And we're going to take another break, and we're going to come back with. Something that you guys do. It's the Jets over Leamington,
oh, yeah.
Which is quite a big event. So I want to talk to you about that. We'll be back right after this on the All Talk Radio Network. This is Big JD. You talking to me. Hey, folks. Big JD back here with Ron Harway from the Sun Parlor Flyers. And we're going to talk about something that they put on here, the Jets over Leamington. And this is your second annual event.
Yeah.
And what is that exactly?
We sponsor a jet event there for all the jet pilots across Canada. They all meet in different, it's like a road tour. They go to different places. They go to the States. They go down to, out to Princeton, BC. Mm-hmm. They go out to, the Bay of Quinte.
And the jet pilots, these are pilots flying the remote control.
Yes. Okay. They've worked their way up. You really don't go that quick, but they've worked their way up to the jet status, mm-hmm. in there, and they have to prove worthy, and they get their jet license, okay. through MAC. So
a jet isn't something that you just jump into starting out or anything like that. It wouldn't be your first.
No, the reason being is because of the reaction times, is because you're traveling at well over 200 miles an hour, and things can get crazy real quick. So mm-hmm. you got to have a very good reaction time. You got to know what the surfaces are doing, how that jet is orientating itself in the sky, and you got to do it in very microsecond decisions.
And working your way up to flying a jet, is there anything as special as far as a license or anything, or you just would work your way up by knowledge and
well,
that kind
after
of
you've got your basic wings, you've mm-hmm. got your basic wings through your trainer and that, you'd work your way up to a sport plane, which is a kind of a low wing instead of a high wing trainer, a low wing trainer, and that, okay. that'll teach you how to get up to the higher speeds in that, and you get to know the aerobatics of the plane. So you've got the pretty well, you can fly it upside down, right side up, you can do vertical, you can do all sorts mm-hmm. of different acrobatic things. And then when you're considered well enough that you can fly in any orientation, in any condition, then you should be able to work your way up to the jet.
So you mentioned your wings and stuff like that. Is that, do you actually get some type of like a paper, an award, or
yes,
some kind
you
of...
Yes, we go through a series of routines, mm-hmm. and when you earn your wings in there, we have a, just like you would a normal pilot, he has to earn his wings, he has to learn how to land, take off, mm-hmm. have total control of it without the use of an instructor, and once you've reached his certification there, we have in certified instructors, those guys will give you your wings, and they'll say that you're well, just like your solo, mm-hmm. you're well enough that you don't have to have somebody looking over your shoulder, like you're safe enough.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We slid a little off topic, but we want to get back onto the Jets over Leamington.
Okay.
What's that? What's
now the Jets over Leamington there, we've got about 35 pilots coming from across Canada, and we're all going to converge down at the Leamington Airport at the last week of May. There will be, we're going to have food. We're also going to have raffles for we're gonna, actually going to raffle off a jet. We've got a lot of different organizations that are going to meet together down there, and we're going to just all it's just a big jet meet, mm-hmm. and the guys, they've got a camaraderie, and it's just a great bunch of guys that are all going to get together and just go flying.
Is that put on strictly by your club, or is it a MAC thing, or are they involved somehow as well?
We have the endorsement of our head MAC will endorse this thing
to put it on, yeah.
It's Peter Ioch, he's the jet chairman for MAC, mm-hmm. and he's actually going to be there too also, because it has to be run according to the jet disciplines. Everything has to be run according to their rules.
So it must be a big handbook joining the club of all these the rules and regulations, or is that something that's on the
site?
Well,
there's, being you're dealing with some high-speed, expensive stuff in there, and there's that opportunity for risk, mm-hmm. An injury there. Everything has to be run to very close tolerances. The field actually has to be set up properly according to MAC rules. Everything has to be a set up in there with our insurance company so that nobody,
right.
It runs a safe event.
Now that's Jets Over Leamington. It's Leamington, Ontario, Canada. And do you have a date for that?
Yeah, it's May 25th to the 27th. It's the whole 3 days, the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. The guys will be setting up on Thursday, and they're going to be doing the practicing on Friday. And anyone can show up on Saturday and Sunday from 9 o'clock till 3. It'll be charged $2 per person. Mm-hmm. So it's relatively cheap in there, and sure. You're going to get some super entertainment.
Hey folks, Big JD here from You Talking to Me. A different guest, a different topic every week on the All Talk Radio Network. Visit my website, www.youtalkingtome.ca. That's the letter U, talking, the number 2, me. youtalkingtome.ca.
Now, one thing I got to ask about Jets Over... Well, first I wanted to ask you this before I forget. Do other cities and areas have Jets Over, whatever their city is, those kinds of things? Like,
yes.
Are there other ones? Yeah.
Yes, they have the... it's a big thing in the States because they've got the Superman down in Metropolis, Illinois. You've got your Top Gun. You've got Florida Jets. You've got... Actually, the closest one in the States to here was the Gros Eel Jets, which occurs. Our biggest one in Canada is the one at the Bay of Quint, which includes mm-hmm. a lot of people up by that Montreal area and Ottawa area that all gather up in there. And the Princeton Jets is a new one out in BC, which is starting to get big for the guys out west, you know, rather than traveling. But we've got guys that are coming down there last year, and they're going to be back again this year from Manitoba.
That's what I was just going to ask you. Where are they coming from?
They're Manitoba, traveling a long way to come on up. And we were at the Toledo... Toledo show, and down at the Toledo show, we've got a lot of interest coming up from a lot of the Americans.
That was my next question. What about the Americans? Because
yeah,
they're so close.
They got some really nice, sweet stuff.
Yeah.
And, money's not an object with a lot of those guys down there.
Do you usually get your hardware and stuff from Canada, or do you...
Yeah, well, we have a lot of the jet stuff there usually comes out of the States. Most of mm-hmm. that is all manufactured from the States and Europe, you know, like Peter, when he had bought his last plane there, he actually got a lot of the parts from France. Mm-hmm. And it's really difficult to try. And now, most of the standard hardware, you have your local hobby shops, which really doesn't stock any of the jet stuff there. Mm-hmm. But the most of the big stuff...
Even local here, you can...
Yeah, we have two shops that are available down here. We've got Action Hobbies in Kingsville. That's one of our sponsors of the Jet event and a mm-hmm. lot of our events. And there's another store in Kingsville, Cape Cod Hobby, which also has a little bit of stuff too for our.
Not right here where you're located, Windsor. Anything?
Yeah, there's nothing here in Windsor right now. Most of our stuff we order from Great Hobbies, which is out of Prince Edward Island in there, and that's the biggest hobby house. And we also got Hobby Wholesale, which is located on the out in Edmonton, Calgary way there, mm-hmm. and that's where a lot of guys buy stuff out that way.
Okay, so you can shop online for that stuff, and
yeah, you can order stuff online, and a lot of stuff can be ordered online. Jets specifically, it has to be ordered mostly from the States. Mm-hmm. A lot of the different kits and that, because it's specific. We have a supplier. Peter Iach, he has AltaCare, which is in the Toronto area. So he's actually the turbine distributor and jets. He's the only one that's in Canada right now. And I know there's a couple of them out west mm-hmm. that have been out there. And Great Northern is another one that's located in our area. But we've got different areas that are starting to expand up in here, you know, rather than bringing a lot of stuff from the States. So we're starting to move real quick up in here. So it's starting to get popular. It used to be very expensive and only guys that were doctors or lawyers could afford this stuff, but now it's coming down that the average guy can start to afford the jets.
That's great. Do you find that some of the younger kids are involved or want to be? Yeah,
yes. A lot of the younger guys are getting involved with the jets due to the response times that you have to be in there. But I mean, not going to knock the older guys, but being it's a money thing and it's the high speeds involved and you'd see guys in at the most probably in their mid 40s or 50s mm-hmm. they're involved with the jets. But
the Jets Over Leamington sounds great, and that information will all be on your website as well.
Right.
Which will get a little more into the website after, but I had one more question I wanted to ask you about the Jets Over Leamington. Do any of the jets fly more than one in a formation stuff? Can they do any of that stuff, or is that left for the real ones?
We've always tried to get something going all there. Well, like when they're flying very in close proximity, and you're looking at about $10,000 each, you really want to get them too close on that, because it can cause some damage. I know there's guys that have been out there that have the snowbird jets, and actually Pete from our club is building his snowbird jet, and we're going to try and see if we can get some formation stuff eventually one day. But usually in most cases, we'll fly at the most four jets at a time, but they'll be spaced apart, you know, so that people know their orientation of that.
Mm-hmm. And they'll do similar
acrobatic
things or something?
They do all sorts of acrobatic. They have smoke on some of the jets, so they can put the smoke and do all the acrobatics.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing some of that, for sure.
That's very good.
Okay, we're going to take another break, and we'll be right back with Ron Harway, president of the Sun Parlor Flyers. Big JD here, All Talk Radio Network. This is You Talking to Me, and as you well know, we're talking to Ron Harway, president of the Sun Parlor Flyers, remote-controlled airplanes. We've been talking about the club, and he's just informed us of the Jets over Leamington happening this summer that you'll want to come out and take a look at, for sure. And now, as far as the website, who is it again in the club that handles your website?
George Mock is our webmaster, right. And he maintains all of the events and all of the pictures from the events and anything upcoming and old news. And it's our website, www.sunparlorflyers.ca, with no U in the parlor.
Right.
And,
okay.
George uploads all of our pictures, and it's well maintained, and information from us.
As far as the club itself, potential members, what are some of the steps that would be taken for somebody to actually join the club and so forth? Do you have an online form or something, or would they email somebody? How's it all work?
Yeah, what we usually do is if somebody says they're interested in the club there, we have them come out to our meetings, or if you come out to the club, if you're interested in it, we have one of our instructors will actually give you a buddy box and let you fly it if you're interested in it, and it'll show you a few little things and that, and then they'll take over, you know, in the case it looks like you're in trouble, we will take over. But applications are available. We have applications at the field for anybody that wishes to join. As far as the MAC goes, joining the national organization, which you have to belong because of the insurances, that's available on the www.macmaac.ca website, and you can join MAC as well. We will handle the first year. We will take care of your MAC for you. And we also, to join the club, we have an initiation fee of $30 for your lawnmower fee, and that's only a one-time thing, and that pays for all of our lawn maintenance throughout the year.
Aside from joining the club and the dues thing and that one-time cost and the MAC thing, there are other things that anybody puts money in for, you know, through the year or for events and things like that, or is that covered by the club?
Yeah, that's mostly, we take care of everything after that. It's mostly your volunteer hours, the 4 hours. And after that is just attending events. And we've got five or six different events, the scale, the electric, the fall classic, the float fly, where we actually go on the water with the planes too. And when you join these events, we have prizes, and we also have food available. So we treat all of the pilots and members really well.
So you mentioned having the planes on the water and so forth. There must be planes with the...
Yeah, they have... I've seen those ones that they will take off on the water. They got propellers, and they got little floats on the back in there. Our planes, we actually take the wheels off, and we put the floats on. And you would actually take off, and we meet out at one of our members. He has a cottage, and we all get together out there for... in June and July, we get out there and out to Roger's place, and we fly out off his beach, and everybody takes off. We got about 10, 15 pilots out there, and it's a barbecue, so we have a good time with that.
Sounds like fun, too. And you can interchange the wheels then to the float, so you can...
We fly all year round, because you can take the wheels off, the floats off, skis. And you put skis on, and we take off from the snow. We have a thing called the Numb Bum every February, where we get out, get a hot pot of chili out there, and we can take off on the snow. We have fun.
That sounds great.
Everything.
Sounds like a lot of fun. And now let's get into those planes. I want to discuss the differences between some of the beginner planes, you know, what new members would start with. And you mentioned the buddy box, and I want to elaborate a little bit on that. So the beginner planes and the buddy box that you use, Tell me about that.
Yeah, the first plane you would buy would be a high wing trainer, and the high wing trainer, you can pick them up for around $450, and that's complete kit. It gives you everything: the radio, the motor, and when you bring it out to the field, there we will. I match you up with an instructor on Wednesdays and Sunday nights, and through the procedure, you would learn how to fly your own plane. And if it looks like you have a problem, the instructor will teach you how to go through all the different flights. And if it looks like you're in trouble, he pushes a button, he takes back over until you get up to the wings and the solo. The second stage is where you actually, you would perfect yourself into the solo and aerobatics, you know, to get very, very oriented. Now, if you have to, like you in the summer or in the winter time there with after, you know, you're laying around and you want to just get your skills all freshened up, we have a simulator, which you can purchase for about $250, $300 in there. It goes on your computer and you'll actually touch up your skills on the computer. And if the nice thing about it is if you screw up,
you're not going to break anything if you crash.
You can reset it and you can start all over again.
Unless you get frustrated and break something on the computer because you're...
Yeah, well, it'll show you, like, they got different types. You've got the trainers, you've got the wartime planes, helicopters, jets, everything's available on the simulator. So they're very, and it's pretty close to, I'd say, about 80% of what is actually out there, you know, for the way it is when you get out there. In fact, we've had few people there that have actually gone right from the simulator to actually doing a takeoff and landing the first time when they get out there, because it really helps you out.
That's good to know, actually, especially for the beginners. And how about intermediate aircraft? Something that you'd move to after, you know, you got a little better? Is there something in the middle?
Well, as you progress yourself, then you go up to a sport plane. And a sport plane is usually a lower wing. It might have a V-tail. It might be a war-type plane, a warbird. It may have flaps. It may have different things like retracting landing gear. So it gets a little bit more sophisticated there, you know, as you start learning in that. And a lot of them will have smoke, and there's different procedures, flips, rolls, loops that you can do, flying upside down.
And it takes particular planes for that.
Yeah, and they're planes that are, they've got some of them that are semi-symmetrical. In other words, the plane will kind of dance around a little bit, and you've got fully symmetrical planes, which are ones that'll fly the same inverted as they will.
All right, okay.
As they will right side up.
And we spoke a little bit about the jets, but I just want you to go back to the jets for a minute about the speed, the RPMs, and like the power of these things and the turbines. I just find that fascinating. There.
Well, the turbine itself is a very intricate machine. It's like a micro size from a full size jet. Operates the same way. You have a stator, you've got a combustion chamber, and you've got where everything inside the jet acts as a thrust. As a thrustable, motor. The jets fire up. When you get them started, you start them up on propane around 40,000, 50,000 RPMs.
Yeah.
It runs on an ECU, which is a little miniature microcomputer there. Mm-hmm. The computer will actually sense that once it sees the RPMs have picked up to a certain point, it slowly introduces through the valves, it introduces the jet fuel, which is the actual jet kerosene fuel that's used in the jets. Only it's a little bit more refined, and it also has turbine oil because it has to go up to 130,000 RPMs at a maximum thrust. And what'll happen there, once the computer sees that the temperature has reached a certain temperature at the exhaust, it will actually shut off the propane, and then it works onto the jet fuel, and that's when the thrust comes onto there.
And the speed?
The jets were restricted to 200 miles an hour, but they've had them as high as 330, I think, is the miles per hour is the record for the jet turbine.
Wow.
And things can happen really quick.
Definitely not a toy, these things. And we're just about out of time here, and last thing I want to ask you about was the helicopters. Are the guys flying helicopters up there?
We've got a couple of pilots that fly helicopters. Mm-hmm. The helicopters are a little bit more intricate and they're harder to fly, being it's like, it'd be like balancing a plate on a stick. You know, it's just it's there's a certain ballet to it there,
right.
and it can be very expensive if things get a little bit crazy, because the rotor head can cost you up as high as $500.
Not like
if you ding them.
Not like the old Vertibirds. Remember those on the thing that when you were a kid there. And we're out of time, and just like to again mention your website URL and the date for the Jets Over Leamington. Your website address is Sun Parlor Flyers.
sunparlorflyers.ca. Mm-hmm. And you can also be reached on my website, www.ronsplanes.ca.
All right. That's Ron Harway from the Sun Parlor Flyers, president of the club, and I really appreciate you being on the show.
Okay, JD.
Thanks.
Great. Thank you very much.
That's JD on You Talking to Me for the All Talk Radio Network. See you next week.
You've been listening to You Talking to Me with your host, Big JD. A different topic, a different guest, every week, right here on the All Talk Radio Network. For more information, visit the website, www.youtalkingtome.ca. That's the letter U, talking, the number 2, me. youtalkingtome.ca.